Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Friday before we hit the weekend, so let's not waste any time. Let's bring in from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Money Mona. Grant, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing well, doing well. We saw maybe a finals preview, Arash, last night. It was a pretty intriguing game, and we got college hoops in the tournament play. So it's a cool time for basketball fans.
You know, so listen, I mean, I think as someone who grew up in Los Angeles, I mean, I am definitely sort of that mindset of, listen, if the Lakers or a Los Angeles team is not in the final, like, I'm not that intrigued. And I'll make jokes from time to time about, oh, that'll do TV ratings. You know, what'll be the TV ratings if it's Denver and the Boston Celtics? Well, the fact of the matter is Denver and Boston have been the top two teams this season. And the game that they had last night on TNT – that is a game that if you're a basketball fan, you're going to watch that game. Yes, the league would prefer, generally speaking, the Lakers to be there or the Warriors to be there or a team with, you know, when I say major star power, you're talking about, like, you know, LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and things like that. The Denver Nuggets, despite being the defending champions, they're not quite there just yet. That being said, I mean, if you're a basketball fan, that game last night that goes down to the wire, it's a one-possession game late, Denver Nuggets, Boston Celtics, that is the signature matchup. And if you're looking for the best two teams in the league to meet up in the finals, it does seem like a collision course. I mean, there would be a big upset. There would have to be a big upset if it's not the Denver Nuggets and the Boston Celtics. I mean, at this point in time, as we sit here on a Friday, I mean, I cannot envision a scenario where, for example, you know, Minnesota or Oklahoma City or the Clippers or, you know, you go down the list of the other playoff teams in the West. I mean, I do not envision them beating Denver if they're healthy in a seven-game playoff series. And the same with the East, you know, with Boston. I mean, that happened a year ago, and it kind of came out of nowhere. But, I mean, I really would truly be shocked if we had another Miami Heat scenario where a team kind of comes out of nowhere and beats the top seed. So what was your big takeaway? Again, a regular season game to me, like the fact that it was a good game, the fact that it came down the wire, the fact that it was a one-possession game late – that does not change my perspective of the Boston Celtics. I mean, Denver is a very tough place to play. So the fact that they lost doesn't make me view them in a different light. I am very excited if that is the finals matchup. But what did you take away from that game last night?
That these are the two best teams in basketball. It just seemed that way. You know, it was haymaker after haymaker down the stretch, and that's what we wanted to see out of these two teams. This was a finals preview by everyone's accounts, and it kind of lived up to that because, you know, we had star power, we had shot making down the stretch. Both of these teams looked like they were primed for a playoff run. Now, obviously the Celtics did lose, and they had some moments where you can point out and say, well, they had a lot of tendencies from 2023. There's a lot of things that I saw where Jason Tatum, if you look at his stat line, he only had 15 points. Like, that's not what you'd like to see out of him against a premier opponent. Jaylen Brown had an excellent first half. I think he had over 20 points in the first half. Porzingis was very good against Jokic, but he just could not stop him. There are a lot of things that, if we see this in a finals matchup, and I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, and Nikola Jokic kind of mentioned that after the game as well, is that we kind of, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves calling it a finals preview because so much can happen. We just kind of assume that it's the top two teams. But it was just it was really high level basketball. There was great defense. There was, you know, obviously turnovers and stuff, but that's par for the course. When you have two teams that are matching up just for the second time, Denver swept Boston this year, guys. And, you know, that's something that you can go into the playoffs and say, if these two do match up, I'd still give the upper hand to Denver just because of that experience that they have in crunch time. We watch it a lot with when the Nuggets play the Lakers, right? Is that when it gets down to crunch time, when it gets within the 3 minute mark, they just know what to do, where to go, who to go to. And Aaron Gordon was a big piece of it last night for the Nuggets against the Celtics. And he's usually in the mix when they play the Lakers as well. So, the Nuggets have just such a great core of players. Even Peyton Watson had a great fourth quarter. He provided great minutes in the second half. That's a guy that if you would have told me, oh, Peyton Watson's going to have a moment, you probably wouldn't have said him, right? But that's just the thing about the Nuggets. It's just next man up. And for the Celtics, it just seems like lately they've had this thing on their back that they cannot escape, right? They blew that big lead to Cleveland, yeah. I think last week. Last night, it just seemed they couldn't get over the hump. Jason Tatum was wide open for a corner three, missed it. He missed a free throw late. Some of their defensive strategies, I just didn't really agree with. They didn't really defend that well down the stretch. Now, it was a close game. I got to give them a lot of credit because they're one of the better teams in the league. I think they're top two. But there's some tendencies from the Celtics that people will say, oh, yeah, it's March 7th. What does it matter? I don't know, because I've seen some of these things happen in April and May and June too. Yeah. So, you know, it's not just something that you can point out and say, oh, well, it's the regular season. These are things that I'm seeing with the Celtics where, yes, Jrue Holiday had a great fourth quarter, but Porzingis, there are some times where, you know, he missed some shots. He jacked up shots that maybe he shouldn't have. So for the Celtics, yes, you're still in the mix and it's still probably going to be a deep run for them, but I just see some tendencies in them that I just don't really like to see from a championship contender, especially in a primetime game against Denver, who you might see in the finals. So, great matchup, probably one of the games of the year, but still, I think it just shows that Denver is just the premier team in the league still. Even though they're a three seed, I still think they're the premier team.
Yeah, and let's bring in Jihei Wiley here. And I thought she brought up a great point last night when we were talking about the Clippers. I mean, like, there are certain teams in the league that are not really worried about their seeding or their standing because they have the confidence that they can go in to anywhere and win a game. And so I think Denver is in that boat. They may still be the one seed. I think Boston's in that boat. They're the one seed. Again, generally teams that don't care about their seeding are good teams. It is interesting, and we can kind of joke about this later, that the Lakers view themselves in that way in terms of they don't care about seeding. That's a weird comment to make when you're kind of in that play-in tournament. But, GA, I mean, I think these are the two best teams in the league, certainly the two best teams in the conference. Boston, clearly the best in the East. Denver, in terms of win-loss, has not been the best team in the West. However, it's tied, or they're like one game back of the one seed. Again, to your point, I don't think Denver cares if they're the one seed. What that game last night showed me, though, is that this is going to be a classic final series. Your thoughts on Denver, Boston? They've been really, in my view, and I think a lot of people's view, the class of the league. Do you think that this was last night a preview of the NBA Finals?
Before I answer this question, I want to shout out my sisterhood, Duke Blue Devils. Last night. Against a good Georgia Tech team, even though they blew them out of the water. So shout out to Coach Lawson. That being said, if this is a you know, a precursor for things to come. Man, Boston, you'd be in trouble. You are in trouble. I mean, here's the thing. Denver has always been, even since like last year, has always been the favorite, right, to win the NBA title last year and this year as well. To go back to back is not, you know, something that's illogical, I think, in all of our minds, for them to have back-to-back championships, especially if they're all healthy. I think we always say that, like, if Denver's healthy, they're going to win a back-to-back title. But last night definitely proved it. Tatum, and I've said this, and I love my Dukies, you know I do. he's just not the guy. And I want him to prove me wrong so bad, but that three in the stretch, like you said, Grant, that he missed, that could have put them over the edge and pulled the momentum and swung the momentum the other way into Boston's favor, and it didn't. And I'm not saying that like what they did as a whole is reminiscent of like what they could have done, you know, the whole entire game, but it's definitely telling of what is maybe to come. I really just hope that they learn from this and they move on from this, and they're kind of, you know, they kind of have like the Jordan mentality where they're like, look, we lost this game, we're not losing another one. Like, we are not going to go out like this in the stretch. I really do hope that this Celtics team kind of plays with a little bit more fervor and just blows them out of the water. That being said, no. I mean, Denver is just, they're the all-time favorite. I mean, what Joker can do offensively, defensively, we've never seen this before. I mean, there is something to be said when my mom can sit there and be like, who is that guy? I have never seen somebody play basketball like that. And my mom has been playing basketball and watching and playing since she was knee-high to her father's ankle. And she's now 75 years old. And for her to say that she's never seen somebody like Joker play the way that he can play basketball, that is a high compliment. And she's very picky. So she only sees greatness in certain great people. And we've never seen somebody play like Joker can play. So I'm going to have to agree with Mama Wiley on this one. Denver back to back. And I don't even know if they can really truly compete. Now, they'll win the East. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. Good for you. Win the East. But I just don't see them winning.
You know,
Tatum at the helm.
And by the way, shout out to Mama Wiley. She is the star, as she would say, you know, during G. Hay's games. Listen, here's what Denver does, though. And you're 100% right, G. Hay. And this happened in the Western Conference Finals with the Lakers. And I thought it was, you know, such an accomplishment for the Lakers last year for them to get to the Western Conference Finals. And I know a lot of Laker fans push back on that. But when you're the 13th seed and you're below 500 coming out of the All-Star break and you get all the way to the Western Conference Finals, that is an accomplishment. They got swept in that series. However, the Lakers fans, and I feel them, like I'm watching these games and they have a lead in the fourth quarter of these games. And at the end of the day, no matter how close the game is, and that game against the Celtics was a one possession game, there was never a time that I truly felt that the Celtics were going to win. Yes, maybe there was like that corner three where they could have gone up by one, but I just felt that Denver was going to find a way to win. So it's weird. Like in one sense, you're like, what a great game. And then I'm thinking, wait, maybe the NBA Finals could potentially play out like that Western Conference Finals a year ago with the Lakers, where it's like four really good, entertaining, one possession game, late games. But then at the end of the day, Denver just sweeps the Lakers. And to your point, Grant, the Boston Celtics have lost both of their games with Denver. And so it doesn't really matter if the games are close. What, like, is there a matchup in the, I mean, listen, I think it's Denver and Boston, but I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, is there a scenario, is there a team that gives Denver more trouble? Again, I know it's not the Lakers, they've lost eight straight times to them, but I'm trying to figure out, is there a team that can push them to a game seven in Denver? And again, I still would bet Denver's going to win that game, but I think that's where we're at with Denver, and they are kind of a sneaky, historically great team. And the reason that I say historically great, to G. Hay's point, is Nikola Jokic. what he's done, the numbers he's put up, this talent that we've seen, and again, a really a perfect complementary player in Jamal Murray. And when I say that, like, there's not a one in one A. Like he is clearly the complementary two guy, but he's an all-star. He's a fantastic complement to Jokic. Is there a team in the West that you think can at least push him to a game seven?
Yeah, there is actually, and I'm gonna go. No, and it's not the Clippers. Okay, I don't know why I said it's so sly. It's not the Clippers. I don't think they can push from the seven. It's another team, and this is the reason why is because last year, after the Nuggets won the championship, a lot of the players said that their first round matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves was the hardest series that they played throughout the whole playoffs, and there's a reason for that. They have a lot of size on the perimeter to disrupt Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray. They have a big in Rudy Gobert that can match up with Nikola Jokic. Nobody's going to stop Nikola Jokic. But if there's something that can stop him, it's the Stifle Tower. And I know that this guy has been run off the court in playoff scenarios, Rudy Gobert, but he can put up a fight against Nikola Jokic. So if there is one team that I think can go toe-to-toe with Denver, and now without Towns, it's a little bit different. It's not that big of a difference, just because Karl-Anthony Towns is not known for being a defender. He's out with a meniscus injury now. And they said, actually, that he'll be back in like a little over a month. So he may be back for the playoffs. He had a torn meniscus, Karl-Anthony Towns. But even without him, they have a lot of perimeter size. Minnesota is great offensively when they run the ball through Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards last night had 44 points and a game-saving block, which was one of the best blocks I've ever seen. If you have Anthony Edwards playing defense like that, and you can put him on Jamal Murray, that Minnesota Timberwolves team, if they match up with Denver, if they get that far, I think they can give Denver a little bit of a problem. And last year, they almost took him to six. I mean, Anthony Edwards was a step back three miss away from making it a six game series. So I think Minnesota, with their size, and if they get Towns back, they could be formidable against Denver. I know that they're very young. I know that they're inexperienced. I know that they haven't won any playoff series since 2004 when the big ticket was there. But right now they have the perimeter size and the interior size to go up against a team like Denver. So that's the one team. And I don't know if there's any other teams. I think it's probably just one team that I can see that could match up well with them. And that's Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I just want to see a good postseason series. And while the Lakers and Denver had a four very good one possession game late, Denver had to come back and win. At the end of the day, when you look at a playoff series and it's 4-0, hard to say that it was a great series. Yes, there were four very good games, four close games. But at the end of the day, you know, listen, GA, quick question for Grant before we head to the break.
Yeah, no, I'm just kind of questioning like your faith in OKC against Denver. I'm just wondering that, Grant. Like, where do you see OKC like figuring out maybe like that they can kind of give them a run for the money? Grant, they are also a young roster, but they are a very promising roster, and they're quote unquote ranked ahead of them. And again, I'm all for not dealing with rankings. Like, I could care less about the ranking, but I still think that OKC has some amazing talent, and they have a bright future ahead of them. I still think that they can give Denver a run for their money because of that matchup.
And I'm going to let Grant go because I think he might agree with me, but I'll just quickly chime in. I mean, it's really the youth, and I'm not saying that they're not that. Like, listen, they could fast track this thing, and we've seen certain teams kind of fast track it, but generally speaking, and I'm trying to think, Grant, and I'm going to have to think a little bit harder on this. I mean, I don't remember a team fast tracking it. Like even, you know, you go back to like when GA and I were kids, so like the Bulls and the Pistons and whatever, like they had to suffer a heartbreak before they, you know, so like, I can imagine them getting to the conference finals and losing, and there being zero shame in that. But again, the Thunder are right there. I think you could definitely say that they may be today the best team in the West, but why don't you like them giving Denver, you know, pushing them to a game seven or perhaps even getting all the way to the finals?
The issue I have with OKC is the same issue that I have with them against the Lakers. they don't have a lot of size. There's a reason why the Lakers have won 3 out of 4 games against OKC this year, is because they have a lot of good perimeter size and interior size. Chet Holmgren is not ready to be bullied around in a playoff series. They don't really have a backup center except for Bismack Biyombo. So nobody can even guard LeBron James. How are they going to guard Aaron Gordon? How are they going to guard some of the perimeter guys from Denver? That is a horrible matchup. Yes, I do agree with you, Jihei and Arash, that OKC has loads of talent. And that's the other thing that I was just going to say, is that they're very inexperienced. They're a young team. Denver would probably dissect them in the last 5 minutes of a game. So one is the size. They do not even come close to the size of even the Lakers, let alone Denver. So I think that's the main thing when we're talking about OKC amongst some of these contenders, and if they can make a run, that's where I'm really skittish about them. But the other thing is, obviously, they haven't won a playoff series in a long time, since 2020. They haven't even been in a playoff series since 2020. So one is the size. Two is just the inexperience. I think Denver would dissect them down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think that is the problem for a young team. You do have to go through these moments. You got to go into the playoffs again, because generally, if you do a good job putting together a roster, you got that one vet. And it doesn't matter if he scores or plays a lot. I mean, he's the one guy saying, hey, guys, there's a big difference between the regular season and the postseason. There's a big difference between game one of a series and game seven of a series. Now, again, you can get that advice from a vet. It's another thing playing in those games. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, Jihei's favorite topic, we got March Madness, and we got the conference tournaments, and we're switching in to the actual NCAA tournament. So we'll talk about that when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. It is March, and that can only mean one thing. It is March Madness. And before the NCAA tournament, we have conference tournaments, and we finally got that up and going with some of the women's tournaments. We got the Pac-12 tournament going out in Las Vegas, Juju Watkins in USC. Coming up big there. That sets up a big game in Las Vegas. Tonight, USC, UCLA in the women's tournament. By the way, the Pac-12 is especially good in women's basketball this year. About, half of the league is ranked in the top 25. Another reminder of how sad it is that this is the end of the Pac-12. Jihei, you gave a shout out to the Duke women's basketball team. What are you most looking forward to now as we get into these conference tournaments here in March and going into the big NCAA tournament here coming up here?
I mean, I would love, just for women's college basketball in particular, I would love to see the Pac-12 do exceptionally well, right? Considering this is the last year of the full Pac-12 conference, I would love to see, I don't know if a lot of people know this about me, but I've never ever really truly rooted for SC. I don't hate SC, but I don't love them. But I would love to see Juju do well, that whole entire team do well, considering I'd love to see Stanford do well. I'd love to see the whole entire Pac-12 just do exceptionally well. Unfortunately, we have South Carolina, who is depleted of all the returners, and yet is still number one in the NCAA record and the standings for them. So they are heavily favored to go back-to-back with no returners, which is phenomenal for any program, let alone, you know, a women's program as well. It's like reminiscent of the UConn program. South Carolina has just done some phenomenal work when it comes to that. That being said, I'm just looking forward to some competitiveness in the men's and the women's conferences, conference tournaments. The ACC has done extremely well as far as the kind of packing the house and doing, you know, being competitive. Duke kind of blew the lid off last night, but I know that as we get down to the nitty gritty of these tournaments, these conference championships, it's going to get even more competitive. I'm looking forward to seeing what some of these kids actually have to offer because of this is like the primary era of NIL, right? Yeah. And the transfer portal. Tennessee, if we look at the men's tournament, Tennessee looks phenomenal right now. Look at them to be, I don't want to say they're an outlier because I think they're ranked like in the top 10. But look at them to, you know, make a huge splash. I'm looking forward to, obviously, my Dukies. I would love for them to get past the Sweet 16. That'd be great. If that happens, I don't think it will, but I'm just being realistic. I love what UConn's doing. I think that Dan Hurley is one of those huge exemplary examples of those who can't do teach. Don't at me, Mr. Hurley. I just think that, you know, you're...
By the way, I think Dan would admit that, listen, he did not have a great playing career. I love the brotherhood. I love that Bobby was the first one on the court. And I got a chance to cover UConn's run because the West Regional was in Las Vegas last year. And I was actually at my... I covered my first Final Four last year in Houston, and they won the championship there. And I think Dan would be the first, you know, he had to go through a lot, and I'm sure you've maybe seen some of the stories. And, you know, when your brother is generally regarded as one of the greatest college point guards of all time, and by the way, Bobby had his own struggles, clearly, you know, in terms of what happened to him in terms of being hurt and not being able to continue his professional career in Sacramento. Dan had to go through a lot, but one of the greatest coaching families in terms of their father being a Hall of Fame high school coach, Dan now kind of, you know, beginning what could be a Hall of Fame coaching career of his own, and Bobby's done a good job, again, with what he has with the Arizona State Sun Devils. I didn't mean to jump in there, but just an amazing family there. But yeah, I mean, Dan will be the first to tell you, like, I'm not Bobby Hurley. Bobby Hurley, what he was able to do, I mean, still to this day, people talk about him as being one of the great college point guards of all time.
I mean, there is no doubt that that family has a pedigree that I think anybody would be jealous of, right? Whether it comes to coaching or whether it comes to being a phenomenal player, Dan Hurley, he's my top five. All dead or alive, he is my top five. Not only point guards, but college players of all time. He's in my top five for Duke. He's in my top five for my college players of all time as well. That being said, Bobby. Bobby Hurley is in my top five. Yes, Bobby Hurley is in my top five of all time college players. That being said, Dan Hurley, what he has done with this Connecticut program is phenomenal because he's had some big shoes to fill, right? Like, you know, I think he was kind of on the chopping block, at least by the fans. I don't want to say by the administration, but like by the fans, a lot of them were very much like, what are you doing? I can't believe you're not, first of all, not playing. Clinging his freshman year was just weird to me, not doing that. But then winning a title without, like, with playing minimal minutes for Klingon, who is a pure seven. He's 7'2". The kid is 7'2", like, and you're not starting him. It just boggled my mind that you wouldn't automatically start him. But now we see the fruits of his labor, right? We see, like, what he was trying to do and how he was trying to get him gradually into the program and what he's been able to do. with the rest of that team. Again, I'm just looking forward to some great basketball, and I love the fact
she's looking forward to some great basketball, and she's also looking forward to some great Wi-Fi, too, at her home. I'm just joking with you.
It's going to happen eventually, man. It's I've already talked to happen
eventually. I'm joking. Grant, let me bring you here. Listen, I am super bummed only because I thought this was going to be such a fun season for USC basketball. Wow. When USC football had the season that they had, and I could have never envisioned that with Caleb Williams coming back and all the returners that they had and coming off of the season. I'm like, man, this is going to be a great and just total dud. And I'm like, well, at least I have USC basketball to look forward to in terms of like Isaiah Collier and Bronny James. We'll see what he does and all this. I mean, Grant, I mean, they've struggled to not be the last place team in the Pac-12. I mean, they're basically, 11th in the Pac-12. And so it's a long-winded way of me saying your thoughts, not just about like March Madness, but I mean, I'm going to Vegas for at least the Pac-12 men's tournament. I really wish I was there for like the women's tournament just because I'm so high on Juju Watkins and USC. But I'll be there for the final Pac-12 men's basketball tournament in Las Vegas. Your thoughts on the end of the line here for the Pac-12 as a, a big-time program?
Yeah, it always sucked. It was very hard to say goodbye to it in football because it's Pac-12 after dark. And, there's so many great moments in Pac-12 history in terms of football. People kind of forget how good the Pac-12 is in basketball too. Obviously, it's one of the weaker conferences when we look at everything, when we look at the SEC and the ACC and all these different conferences. But, just seeing that group of teams, USC playing UCLA, and a Pac, just seeing the Pac-12 logo, having a Pac-12 tournament, like you mentioned in Vegas, and it's really disappointing how USC's season turned out because just like you, Arash, I was very excited to see them play basketball. I was very excited for Isaiah Collier. I was very excited for Bronny James. And, we don't even know if Bronny James is going to enter the draft at this point. That's just kind of how bad the season's gone. And I got to give him a lot of credit because he's coming back from a heart procedure and everything like that. So, just for him to be on the basketball court is a blessing. But in terms of the athletics, I was kind of banking on the men's basketball to save USC athletics, but it was the women's basketball and they're playing amazing. Juju Watkins is a transcendent talent. And I'm just so happy for those women because, they're kind of the focal point of USC athletics right now, which is something that I guess a year ago you wouldn't have said. And, USC men's basketball, they got a win last night against Arizona State. So, hey, maybe a Cinderella run, Arash?
not at all. But, yeah, I mean, listen, the fact that USC won last night against the Sun Devils, and here's the issue that I have with that. I mean, you watched that game last night, and you look at the court side. Of course, LeBron James there to support his son, but C.J. Stroud is there. And during the course of the season, we've seen Denzel Washington and Kevin Hart and Vanessa Bryant. And it's like it really has been. And I knew this was going to happen with Bronny James in terms of like games being sold out, star power, prime time spots. Again, last night's game was on Fox Sports 1, but they've just been so bad. So they win last night. They're now 13-17, and 7-12 in the Pac-12. Again, it's been so frustrating to watch. And again, I not that I take any solace in this, but like UCLA hasn't been much better. So it's not like they're doing great. And so it's been frustrating. I'm going to bring in Jihei here. And I don't think Andy Enfield's on the hot seat, and we know him very well. And he's one of our favorite guys. He's a friend of the show. We've gotten to know him personally. I think he's fine because A, he's at USC, which again, I have told him this. There's no pressure at USC. You can have a bad season. You can have a bad couple of seasons. He's also an amazing recruiter, and I'd love to get GA's thoughts on this, but, There's going to be talk about him on the hot seat, all that good stuff. He's fine. He'll come back. Now, he can't do this again. Like, listen, you can't be in you can't be like one of the last place teams in your conference with that much talent. But G, your job on told you Andy Enfield.
I mean, one of the best recruiters of all time. He's in the top five right now as one of the best recruiters of all time in the NCAA right now, specifically because he got Liam Campbell. And I don't know if everybody knows who Liam Campbell is, but they're about to. Because you might be seeing.
You gotta Google this kid. He looks like Larry Bird's. Like, it looks like someone.
It's literally a doppelganger.
Well, it looks like someone went in a DeLorean with a flux capacitor, like back into like 1979. Like, this doesn't just look like a relative of Larry Bird. It looks like Larry Bird himself. And kudos to Liam for growing the hair out, growing the stash out, wearing number 33. I mean, this looks like Larry Bird.
I mean, it is, well, it technically, by all respects, is Larry Bird, right? It's his, it's Larry Bird's sister's grandson. So however you want to phrase that.
However you want to, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, wow. I think that the traditional way of saying it is that it's like his great, it's like his grand cousin or something like that. But he is a relative of Larry Bird, and by all accounts, I believe that a lot of the high school publications have said that he played just like Larry, very scrappy, very, you know, bootstraps to the ground kind of playing. So he just won his second straight state title. I can't wait to see what this kid can do in LA. Now, I know it's a super faux pas that he's in LA, or he's about to be in LA next season, but I'm looking forward to it. I cannot wait. But this is what makes Andy Enfield's job solid, right? Is that he can get Larry Bird's distant relative.
Yeah, and G, that's a good point. But I think two things are true here. You could be a very good recruiter, but you also, like, when you recruit the talent that he does bring in, and again, that is such a big part of it. You cannot win a championship, and you cannot go deep in the tournament without that talent. That being said, the job he did this season was so disappointing because of the talent that he has. If you have the talent that he has, again, I'm not saying you got to win the tournament. I'm not even saying that you got to get to the Final Four, but you got to go on some kind of a run here. You got to get to the tournament. You know, it'd be nice to get to a Sweet 16. And again, the only reason I'm making the Steve Lavin example, and the big difference here is Steve Lavin coached at UCLA, not USC. But Steve Lavin recruited amazingly well. I would put him in the conversation as one of the all-time great recruiters. Again, not as hard to recruit when you're at UCLA, but again, just perfect, you know, the look and the feel, and like he felt like the Pat Riley of Westwood. The problem is Steve Lavin couldn't get that team to the Final Four. He would always lose in the Sweet 16. Maybe in the Elite Eight, he'd get his team there. But so when you recruit top five classes, that's amazing. That gets the fan base excited. That gets people excited. That gets butts in seats. Once that happens, though, you have to win. Grant, your thoughts on developing a team concept, though, when you have these stars? I mean, I think, and this could totally be different because they're moving into the Big Ten, so we'll see how that goes. But there was so much pressure on USC because of Caleb Williams. And maybe I'm putting too much like emphasis on the Holiday Bowl. But like, I think USC is going to be just fine next year. Like, they got the talent. They got the system in place. They don't have this Heisman Trophy winning number one pick transcendent talent coming in who's making millions of dollars off the field. But I got to be honest with you, like maybe that's not so bad in college. Your thoughts on recruiting a great team and not having that, again, like Isaiah Collier is going to be a lottery pick. He's going to be just fine. Did it hurt this team? And I guess I'm kind of trying to draw a through line between the struggles of the football team and the basketball team. When you have a star player who's like kind of already got like one foot out the door, is that a problem?
Yeah, I think it may be a little bit of an issue because you can recruit all you want, right? You can recruit the best recruits, but if they don't have that buy-in factor, if they don't buy into the culture and the system that you have in place, that talent's not going to be utilized to its fullest potential. Look, I've been on college programs where we've had guys come in that were touted recruits, right? They were top guys and they didn't really buy into the system or the program right away. So they were on the bench, you know, in baseball. it's really tough because you kind of got to prove your way into a team, into a lineup. And these guys thought, hey, I was the best high school player in my state. I was the best high school player in my local area. I'll be fine. I started everywhere. And it's the same with basketball and football. A lot of these guys are highly recruited because they're the best at their position at their local school, in the state, whatever it may be. But as talented as they may be, it's a step up still. College is still a different level. And if you don't have, obviously, there's a lot of guys that have insane talent that they can just transfer it over to that level. But there is a certain level of buy-in, which is why Lincoln Riley is so crucial for that USC football team, is because he gets guys to buy in. I mean, look at Miller Moss, right? He could have been starting at another school, but he sat there behind Caleb Williams and look what he did. Now he's probably going to have that starting job because he threw 6 touchdowns in a bowl game because he just waited his time out and he bought into the program. In my case, right, I got a scholarship and I was like, hey, I'm probably going to start. But when I got there, I noticed like, hey, I'm a thinner guy. I got to work at it. I got to get better at it to earn a spot. It's not just given to you. Some guys do. They do give you an earned spot if you're a really highly, highly touted recruit, especially with NIL money. They kind of make that a thing. But even if you're a highly touted recruit, even if you come into a system where you know that that coach can do well for you, it's still not a given. You still have to buy into that program, buy into what Andy Enfield says, what Lincoln Riley says, because you will find yourself. I mean, I'm sure I'm not going to put anything negative on Bronny James, but he was very highly touted out of high school, right? Yeah. And now he's getting, sparser minutes than he did. He's getting less of a spotlight than he did. So I think for him, it's the mental thing. A lot of these guys, they don't really understand the mental part of it. Yes, you can have all the physical talent in the world and you can get all the NIL money you want, but that mental leap that you have to take at the college level, that's what separates those good and great programs, those elite programs like Duke, UNC, all those teams that win titles, Villanova. They have that mental and that culture. That's what buys everybody in. So it's not just the talent and NIL money. You have to buy into what that coach wants and what that program needs.
Yeah, and this is going to be a big topic of conversation as we go into the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas. I think we will get a USC-UCLA game in the first round there if USC can find a way to win. The attention around those games, the USC games, because of Bronny James, will be huge. And again, the conversation will be, will he declare for the draft? Again, obviously he shouldn't. And if his last name wasn't James, and if he wasn't LeBron James's son, this wouldn't be even a topic of discussion, but it is. Again, it's gonna be a big reason why the Pac-12 tournament will be a big focal point. Because again, are we viewing the last collegiate game of Bronny James's career? But listen, it's March Madness. It's conference tournaments. It's the NCAA tournament. And for the first time in a long time, I'm more looking forward to the women's tournament than the men's. But at the very least, I'm looking forward to both. So every night of the week, we get a lot of games. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again next week. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.